This is Record of Change, a podcast that documents how people's lives are being shaped by the coronavirus pandemic.
I'm Pratap Nayar, and with me are Hui, Kecheng, Matthias, Stephanie, and Thomas. You may not have heard from Thomas because he's a behind-the-scenes magician who edits, produces, and makes the episodes listenable along with Matthias. So, today we're gathered here to make a short update episode to provide some context on how the first season of the podcast and the team came together. So Matthias, can you talk about the nitty-gritties of putting this podcast together, like getting the project grant, finding team members and diversifying the group, etc.?
Yeah, sure. So I think all of us remember when this pandemic started that there was a lot of campaigning in the social media of we are all in this together and stay at home and this stuff. And people were clapping on the balconies. And what I found very interesting about this moment was I felt like this is the first time maybe ever, at least in my lifetime, that there's something happening for everyone at the same time all over the world. So this was kind of the starting point of, oh, actually, we all have something in common, no matter where we are, how rich we are, what's our background. So this was the initial motivation. And then together with my friend Kim, we started brainstorming about a podcast idea to listen again and again to people to track this change that we all go through. Because by then, when we started this, which was maybe in February, March 2020, we thought, oh, our sense for time is so different right now. By then, I think I was still in Palestine and working there for an international organization. And it already felt like time feels so different. And now looking back, now it's October and it feels like 2 years have passed, but it's only a couple of months. And then we thought of it would be great to have a number of interviewees from all over the world that share their perspectives. And since we were like two Western, white, straight, global North people sitting in Germany, we're thinking, oh, we should diversify the team. So we have a team that is a bit more diverse than the two of us were. And just in order to get closer to interviewees, I mean, even though I have worked a bit in Asia, maybe someone from Asia would be more interesting to interview someone from Asia. So you are a bit closer by profession, by cultural background or location also. And then there was this open call by the Bosch Alumni Network for online activities. And we luckily got a grant that at least provides some kind of remuneration for us, the team, so that we could approach people in a bit more professional way than not just doing it on a voluntarily basis, but also provide some small fee. Yeah, so one by one, we put together this team, and now it's the six of us here, and I'm very happy about this team. We went already through a nice process. We started building up this team of how do we want to work together, what are our tasks. We meet every week, which is great to catch up and also to improve our podcast. And together we identified, I think, a great number of people, of interviewees that are located all across the globe and are super diverse.
And there's even still the seventh person. You mentioned your friend Kim. She is also still a member of our team, right? She's just like me. This is Thomas, by the way, the background magician, as Prata called me. And she's another one of those.
I think it's kind of unique, or it's a bit outstanding, that we have never met in person in this group. We all met online only, right?
Yeah,
I've never met any of you guys, no. Yeah, so when we talked about representation of different geographies, I immediately had Didem in mind, the person that I interviewed first, because she lives in Istanbul, and at that time, Turkey was not represented, and she's also a journalist. So I thought it would be interesting to interview Didem to understand how her life is shaping up during this pandemic. That's how I brought Didem in. And then we wanted, Hui, do you want to tell us how you found Ray?
Yeah, sure. I knew Ray from actually 6 years ago in an exchange program. We took part in an exchange program with other youths from Southeast Asian countries. And after the program, actually, we didn't get in touch much. I got his Facebook, and then we just update with each other via what we posted on social media, not like really talking, you know. And then there was one day I saw that he became a flight attendant. I went in and then congratulated him because he talked about how happy he was finding that job. And after that, we also didn't talk much about it. I just know that he is a flight attendant. And then after the coronavirus got known worldwide, one day I saw him posting a picture of himself wearing an uniform of a barista. And then he talked about how he has to change his professions for a little bit because of the influence of the pandemic. And that I read the whole post, and then I thought to myself, it was like really fascinating what he has gone through. But at that time, I didn't expect that like I would take part in these podcast projects, only until Matthias reached out to me, and then we talked for a little bit about putting a podcast project together, that I thought, well, I think Ray is a prime person to share his story.
Interesting. Now, Kechang, do you want to go?
Yes, sure. When Matthias first invited me to this project, my initial idea was to find some journalist friend who went to Wuhan in January or February, where the pandemic first broke. I know they would have interesting story to share, right? Unfortunately, my journalist friends were either too busy or not confident in speaking English. So I had to find someone else. Then I remembered Winnie, who was actually infected with COVID-19. And I know this because she posted a lot about this situation on Facebook, about her experience. So I think, okay, that's a first-hand source, right? So it's even better to directly talk to a person who had the first-hand experience. So I'm sure she had a lot to share, and I was personally very interested in her story. And then she invited her husband to join. So actually, her husband actually spent much longer time in hospital than her. So then I interviewed both of them together. So that's how I found, basically, also Facebook played an important part here for us to get to know those person more directly influenced by this pandemic.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Kechang. Matthias, you interviewed two people.
Yes, I interviewed Fida Shurab, that I also never met in person. But as I mentioned, I work for this international organization in Palestine based in Ramallah.
Yeah.
And so I worked there since January this year, actually, and I was very eager to have a perspective involved from this region because it's very special. And then when we started talking about lockdown, I thought, oh, actually, people in Gaza, they are faced with sort of lockdown for 12 years already. So I was very eager to have this included. And after reaching out to some friends, I got the contact to Fida, who was luckily willing to share her perspective. My other interviewee is Mike. Mike is, I guess, well-known playwright and an activist in Cape Town, South Africa. And we actually met, I think, 5 years ago in China, in Guangzhou, southern China, in a workshop, because we were both involved in the theater. And I haven't been in touch with him for long, and I didn't know what he was doing and stuff. But when we talked about different locations of interviewees, I just reached out to him thinking, oh, he could be a very interesting person talking about the culture, talking about Global South, talking about these inequities that are even more visible now during the pandemic.
Yeah, interesting. Stephanie came on board a little later when we were trying to talk to someone from the US. That's how Stephanie came on board. Stephanie, can you tell us about your interview subject?
Yeah, so I would say you guys almost found Mackenzie, at least in concept, before you found me. So as someone who teaches undergraduates and works with a lot of 18 through 22-year-olds, I think Kim thought I might be a good person to add to the team. So in finding Mackenzie, it's interesting. This summer, oddly enough, I don't interact with many high school students. I usually only find them after they graduate, but I happened to meet Mackenzie in August of 2020, and I met her through her internship. And as someone who teaches social entrepreneurship, we were kind of scouting around for activities that we could do remotely with our students at the university. And I met Mackenzie when she was an intern, and I remember thinking she's gone through this very typical U.S. experience of kind of losing out on that typical end of high school experience that we all see in movies, and it's just very iconic. But at the same time, she's very atypical as a person. So she decided to take this gap year. So she's not kind of following this traditional path. She'll go to university next year. But all of a sudden, when we were trying to think about who might be kind of a good person to fill this role, I didn't immediately think of her. But then all of a sudden, it just clicked that she was in this perfect position. So yeah, that's how I found Mackenzie.
Thanks for filling us in, Stephanie. So now we've all been indoors in making this podcast. What has been the most difficult aspect of making a podcast during the pandemic for each of us? Stephanie, would you like to go?
Yeah, you probably see me half laughing. I think for me, the hardest thing is actually trusting that there's a vision in a way, because it seems like everybody and their neighbor is currently launching a podcast. But I think being a part of this team, and this is where I give my tear, the kind of like smiley tear emoji, I think this group is fantastic. And when I kind of got looped into some of the folks who would be on the team, I thought, you know, this is exactly something that I would love to do. I don't want to hear myself talk, but I love stories. I'm someone that, even as a researcher, I center on stories. So it just seemed like a great opportunity to meet people and to do this kind of work. So yeah, I'm selfishly very happy that I got to be a part of it.
From a perspective of diversifying the profile of the interviewers, because we only have, like before you joined the team, we only have male identified interviewers. So we did interviews, female interviewees, but from the perspective of the interviewers, before you joined the team, we only have male identified interviewers. So I think it is a great plus for us when you joined the team.
Well, if it helps any, it only occurred to me yesterday, and I've been a part of this group for several months, that I'm like, wait a minute, I'm actually the only woman on the interviewing side of it.
You don't see gender. You don't see gender.
So you were asking about difficulties, right? And so I'm a radio producer. And so for me, this pandemic has been just very challenging in trying to record good audio, because I love my job as a radio producer because it enables me to meet people, right? Like, it gives me permission to tell people, hey, I want to come to your place. I want to meet you. I want to look around and I want to interview you. And with my professional recording gear and microphone, right? And now we are all sitting at home. We can't meet each other. And we still have to try and record good audio and record this moment. And so figuring out how to do that, and for this podcast in particular, like finding a solution to record people that works in every place and that everybody can do and that still delivers a good quality, that has been challenging. And you can hear that in some of the episodes. Some of the audio is better, some of the audio is not so great. So we are all still learning and trying to figure that out. And it also, of course, it depends now on what everybody has at home, what technology do they have at their disposal. But I think in general, I want to really do a shout out to TalkSync, which is a brand new app which just appeared in the right moment, and it helps you record on a smartphone. I think it's super easy, and they're doing a great job.
Yeah, so that's been the interesting aspect for me as well. I'd love to go out on the field and report because I'm a journalist. But of course, now that's not possible. So we're all limited by this pandemic. So yeah, that's been something limiting for us, even though we overcame all that somehow.
I want to add one thing. I wouldn't call it difficult, but just a challenge, is to set up team call with all of us, because we're located in 3, 4, 5 different time zones. So there's East Coast US, then majority Germany, and Kachang, you're in Hong Kong, and Hui, you were in Tokyo until 2 weeks ago. So now the most suitable time that we found was 8 a.m. for our U.S. colleagues. And Kacheng, what time is it? It's 9 p.m.?
8 p.m.
So it's kind of the only possible time that we can talk. sort of not to ruin someone's sleep.
So we've done 8 episodes so far. Do you guys have a favorite clip or an anecdote or a quote to share from the first season? Who you want to go first?
Personally, I don't have a specific quote or citations, but when you talk about her experiences of being hospitalized with her husband, and then all of the nurses and all of the doctors kind of like kept a certain distance from them. But then there were these cleaning ladies who came and then offered them snacks, and then they tried to talk to Wendy and her husband so that they would not feel too lonely. I mean, that was something for me personally, very, very nice and very humanized, you know, because of course it is a different kinds of humanizations, because for the nurses and for the doctors, they are also doing a very nice job for helping Wendy and her husband to recover from the disease. But when they are in the hospital, they were really lonely. And then with such kind of like small but nice interaction, I think it made their day.
Yes, so actually I asked that question because Wendy posted on Facebook about her interactions with these care workers, these clean ladies. So I was touched by reading her updates on Facebook. So that's why I deliberately asked her about these interactions. I really wanted to share that with audiences. So yes, I want to mention a quote also from Wendy and Dominic's episode, which is from Dominic, Wendy's husband, who said that after being in hospital for about like 2 months, he felt a sunshine on his skin for the first time. So yeah, that touched me because yes, it's difficult to imagine what it's like to be staying in a hospital without actually directly touching the sunshine for 2 months. So that must be difficult, but I'm also glad to learn that they both got some positive things.
Yeah, I think for me, the Alkes episode is one of my favorites, maybe because I'm self-employed as well, like he is. And in his case, there's even more at stake because it's a family business. And I was really feeling that pressure that he was under. And also, I found it interesting to hear how he changed the menu of the restaurant. So thinking about the fact that a restaurant menu reflects this time somehow, I found that really interesting. And then he shared this roasted watermelon recipe. That's like my favorite moment of the whole season. And it's maybe it's also because I'm vegetarian. I'm not vegan, but vegetarian. So I so want this watermelon. And I put it on my bucket list whenever I
visit Athens.
Should I make it to Athens sometime? I want to go to his restaurant and have that watermelon. And also, like, it's really for this time because it feels so much like comfort food and something. So I just felt this immense craving for this watermelon that suddenly tastes like roasted salmon or, yeah, fascinating.
I've heard a couple of people reach out to me also. They told me the same thing about watermelon.
In the latest episode, episode 8, where with Mackenzie from the US, there was one point when she said, yeah, you know, I think my parents suffer more than we students do.
Yeah, I think especially when she was talking about her parents, and to give a little bit of context, she was saying that a lot of the graduating high school, going to prom, which is where everybody gets dressed up and goes and does a kind of like a dance and all these other things that you see at the end of a high school experience, you know, yes, she missed out, but as someone who's kind of also looking to the future, she had a lot to look forward to in the sense that, you know, she's doing this gap year, she's eventually going to university. But for her parents, that's the last time that she's kind of home and that, you know, they get to miss taking pictures of her with her cap and gown. I think for me personally, my pick would actually be Mike's episode because there was one point in it, and I think this is where it connects to me professionally, when he was saying that he wanted to preserve the dignity of the people that worked in the theater. And he was basically saying, you know, I don't want to give charity to these actors. I want them to be able to feel like they're earning that money that they bring in. And I thought that was really insightful, because I think as someone who works in the social entrepreneurship realm, and I previously used to teach cultural entrepreneurship, so people that are in kind of the cultural industries, it's interesting because that is the orientation that we have, but it's not the first one that people go to. It's usually the charity side of things. Let's just bring in money. Let's just give people money. But I think he's absolutely right that especially when you've developed a craft over all of these years and you're no longer able to use that craft and to share that magical experience with an audience, trying to think about how do you give someone that experience when it looks like for the foreseeable future that that's not going to be possible. So I thought that was really, really insightful, creative, and I really am. I even went on the website of the Stand Foundation just to see a little bit more about what they're doing. So I'm really hopeful that, you know, that goes well and that we can see in future episodes how that maps out.
What has been the pandemic's effect on your life? How has your work evolved in this pandemic time?
You know, I'm still renting a desk at a co-working space and paying good money for that. But for months, I couldn't go there, right? So I want to work from there because I mean, I could work from anywhere, but I just didn't want to work from home because I feel like I need people around me. And even if I don't interact with everyone in my co-working space, I feel like it's a different environment. It's a work environment. I have people around
me. Sense of community.
Yeah, a sense of community. And then suddenly being cut off from that and having to sit at home and just doing everything by myself. it's been strange. And I so hope that I could go back sometime. I go back now less than once a week if I really have to be in that space. I go there, but I still wouldn't feel safe to spend all day, every day there. So yeah, it's still working from home and still trying to adapt to that. And my boyfriend is working from home as well. And we're trying to be at opposite ends of the apartment. That we are not on top of each other all the time.
Okay. So in my case also, everything in my life has acquired a sort of stillness. I miss traveling. The most important part of traveling for me is that I work when I travel. I research for stories and I report them when I travel. There are actually really very few things you could do as a freelance desk reporter, writing in English and living in Germany. So I don't see the status quo changing for another year or so. Hui, what's up with you? You recently flew back to Germany from Tokyo. Didn't you?
Yeah. So basically, when we started this project, I was in Tokyo because I'm an ethnographic researcher. And then I was at that time in Tokyo collecting data for my own research. And my research had to do with like migrants. So I would do a face-to-face interview with them all the time and then do participant observations. So I would go to large social gathering events and then do my observations. And when I still remember that it was in January, I just went back from Taiwan, and then I went from Tokyo to Kyoto to attend this large Lunar New Year party with the Vietnamese community there. And then little did I know that actually that was the last time that I would be out of Tokyo for the next half a year, or like for the next 8 months. Like after that, everything just went downhill. I couldn't even do any of my field work face to face anymore. Like I couldn't talk to people face to face anymore. So as a researcher in the field at that moment, I was deeply frustrated. But I mean, like I still consider myself to be in a pretty lucky position in comparison to others who basically lost their jobs or had their income severely affected, because for me, I had to move everything online, but I could still manage a little bit. And I stayed in Tokyo until September, and then I flew back from Tokyo to Germany. It was direct flight from Haneda to Frankfurt. So it was 12 hours. The funny thing was that after doing the interview with Ray, I knew about, like, okay, so with Ray, when he fly domestically, he has the full PPE on. But I started to question my own safety, because when I stepped on the plane, I didn't see any PPE at all. So the flight attendants just wear face masks and gloves, and that was all.
Can you imagine wearing PPE for 12 hours? Matthias, you came to Germany before this pandemic started, is it? You were also in Gaza, weren't you?
No, I was in Ramallah.
Ramallah, sorry.
Well, I'm supposed to be there still. I have an apartment there. I pay my rent there. But when the pandemic started, my employer said, well, maybe it gets worse here, so you can go back home to Germany. And then since my wife was pregnant already, we decided to go to Germany, even though by then, which was end of March, it was maybe on the peak until now in Germany, and in Palestine and Israel was pretty low numbers until then. So it was a weird feeling. And yeah, when we left, we thought, yeah, maybe a couple of weeks and stuff. So we just packed the necessary stuff. And yeah, here we are. We are still here. Our baby was born in Germany instead of Jerusalem, which we already had everything planned for, you know, like chose a hospital, sought out how to do it and stuff. Now she was born in Germany, and we are living in the house of my mom, with my mom, where I grew up. So it's my wife, our daughter, and me now living in my childhood bedroom. And yeah, since end of March, I'm working remotely for Ramallah.
Sounds like you should do an episode about you, Matthias.
but I mean, I wanted to say it earlier when we talked about our favorite episodes. So I'm happy that we have also this perspective from an environment where people don't have the choice to discuss where they go in the summer vacation of pandemic times. So this was something that touched me personally a lot. Because I have some colleagues that have family in Gaza and so on, and colleagues that go to Gaza if they can. And yeah, it touched me a lot hearing that, I mean, they have a double lockdown, sort of. They've been locked down for 12 years in the Gaza Strip, and now they even had a lockdown inside Gaza.
So Kecheng, how the pandemic affect you?
So I feel like I got a job, like an online teacher. So, but I feel okay. Yes, I think actually by teaching online, basically all of the course materials could be covered by online teaching mode. But I feel bad for the students, because I believe that for university students, classroom teaching, lessons, classes are only a part, or only a small part of their university life. A major part of university life would be like a community, right? Connections with other students and teachers in the campus. So that is not possible now. So I think the students got negatively affected more than teachers. So that's my situation. Another situation is that actually, because I have my family, my parents are still in mainland China, and I am now in Hong Kong. It used to be quite easy to travel between Hong Kong and mainland China. You can travel to Shenzhen, a neighboring city in mainland China, very, very easily. Just take a subway and then you arrive in Shenzhen. But nowadays, the border has been basically closed for like almost a year. So we're not able to travel to mainland easily. So that creates a lot of difficulty, especially when people have families in mainland China, or they have families in Hong Kong, but they are now in mainland China. So that's a major influence for people in Hong Kong now.
Okay. Do we have any thoughts for second season, guys? We were thinking the episodes would be shorter. I'm also really interested in knowing how they spent their summers, this chaotic summer. Now we are in autumn already and the second wave is already upon us. Do we have any more thoughts for second season?
Yeah, I think from my end, I'm really excited to hear how Mackenzie's current internship is going. So I spoke to her, I think, a day or two before she was starting to work with an organization called Vote.org here in the States, which is... it's a nonpartisan organization that is trying to get folks registered to vote. So it's an exciting place to work in a time like this.
The U.S. is in the thick of election.
I have to say, I really enjoyed this episode that we are recording right now because I learned a lot about all of you that I didn't know before. And I'm just hoping to also learn more about our team on the second episode. And you all talked about your relationship to your interviewees. And yeah, so I'm also looking forward to that part where we learn more about that relationship between you and your interviewees in the second round of interviews.
So I am actually writing like a chapter for my own dissertations on methodology. And then I came across this term of like a qualitative dance between the researcher and the research. So it basically talks about the interactions between the interviewers and the people that the interviewer interact with. It's like a dance. So we would promise to have more dancings in season two, I guess.
I'm looking forward to hear every interviewee's journey that they've going through. So I'm very grateful and very much looking forward to the interviewees' journeys.
Yes, same here. And also, I think we can have our interviewees talking a little bit more about people around them so that we can get more information, we get more perspectives. For example, as Thomas and Matthias suggested, we can ask Winnie to share the experience of her parents who are actually in mainland China, so that we can get to know more about how mainland China controlled this pandemic. So I think we can definitely get more interesting information and perspectives in our season two.
You were listening to Record of Change and an episode looking back at season one. With the next episode, we start season two and we will listen again to our interviewees, starting with Didem Tali from Istanbul. Didem is a freelance journalist who in our very first episode shared how the pandemic has twisted most of her very exciting working plans for 2020. Follow us on your favorite podcast provider and find out more about the stories behind on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners.